I grew up in the South Bronx, right? Poor. My mom never went to school. Dad never went to school. Went to high school in the Bronx. Had a chip on my shoulder, but was smart. And I just had to leave. And it was just probably more desperation than it was anything else. So I spent all of my time kind of going, what kind of skills? How much stuff can I learn? Like, I'm leaving. And I just had to do that. And I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know what I was going to do, but it had to have been better from where I was. Fear, you're here. You're in the room. I know you're here. I know that you're right behind me. Rather than run away from it, just stop and reassess. What do you have, and how bad do you want to get out of it?
Welcome to the We Are Photographers podcast from Creative Live. I'm your host, Kenna Klosterman, bringing you true stories from behind the lens and behind the lives of your favorite photographers, filmmakers, and creative industry game changers. From their struggles to their wins, we get the real human stories about why they do what they do. I believe there is something to learn from everyone's story. So listen, get inspired, and discover why, in the end, your creative journey is all worth it. In this special edition of We Are Photographers, as we get revved up for Creative Live's epic annual Photoshop Week, we're featuring one of your favorite instructors, RC Concepcion. Spend 3 days unlocking Adobe Photoshop and Lightroom from the leading industry experts so that you can create your best work yet. And zero airfare is required. So just mark your calendar and join us online for free June 12th, 13th, and 14th. RSVP for Photoshop Week on creativelive.com/PSW. That's creativelive.com/PSW. RC Concepcion is an award-winning photographer, podcast host, educator, storyteller, and the author of 8 best-selling books on Photoshop, Lightroom, HDR, and how to get your images on the web. RC is now known as Professor Concepcion at Syracuse University's Newhouse School. He is a highly sought-after public speaker, lecturing at seminars and workshops around the world, including right here at Creative Live. In this episode, we talk about what it takes to continually reinvent yourself and life's epiphanies that often arise when unexpected. RC takes us on a journey from growing up in the South Bronx to the lavish life of working in tech during the dot-com boom, to the lows of working out of a U-Haul 10x10 storage unit, and back up to being a Photoshop guru whose face and voice are known around the world. This is We Are Photographers with RC Concepcion, and this is his story. RC Concepcion, so happy to have you on the podcast. I know that you had lived in Florida for quite some time, and now you're in upstate New York at Syracuse. Tell me about what brought you there and what you are doing now.
Oh my God, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. It's been a weird journey, right? Actually, the funny part about this entire thing is that a lot of it started probably about a year ago, I want to say, at Seattle, like at Photoshop Week, because I'm friends with Gregory Heisler, who's one of the people that was giving a talk in Seattle. And working in the industry, I think one of the big things that I found a little frustrating when I was kind of doing that stuff is there's the circuit, right? There's this general thing of everybody that gets together and photographers that are going out touring and talking and sharing and teaching and things like that. And while it's cool, like I love it, I think it's awesome, there's a lot of photographers that are out there doing the same thing. And you kind of just look at each other and go, hey, what's up? Like, I just saw you. Let's get together and do a thing. And then you lose contact. Like, you don't talk to anybody. I mean, it becomes very solitary. You see people for very short amounts of time. And one of the people that I had always done that with, I've kept a long relationship with Greg Heisler and Gregory Heisler. And it was one of those things where I was just like, we're always trying to connect. We're trying to do stuff. And I was like, you know what, man? I'm just going to go a couple of days early. And I'm going to invest the time to say, you know what, man, let's go and get something to eat. Let's go do something. Let's just go break bread and just chill, not talk about photography, just kind of catch up. So I went earlier. He flew in. I flew in. And the elevator door opened. And he's like, hey, listen, I got to tell you why you're moving to Syracuse to come work at Syracuse University. And that was it. We had a conversation. And I was like, oh, you know, thanks, man. That's Cool. Yeah, I'm not leaving Tampa. And I didn't think about it. Like, I was like, thanks for considering me. That's awesome. Like, my wife never in a million years would have moved to snow. She's made that very clear on multiple occasions. But then, like, 3 weeks later, I forgot to mention it. I'm driving around in Tampa and I'm like, oh my God, you shouldn't. Like, Greg says hi. And, he told me about this thing at Syracuse. And she's like, we're moving, right? And I'm like, I told him no. So, long story short, we went back and forth and we talked. And then I think I had like 3 weeks to pack everything, move everything out of Tampa, drive all the way up to New York. I'm originally from New York, but drive back home after 11 years, come back to New York. And I think I was here like 2 days before I had to teach a class on multimedia storytelling. So it's been crazy. Like, the transition of Professor Concepcion was fast, but it's cool.
Professor Concepcion. All right, awesome.
Right?
That's what I'm going to call you now for sure.
Oh my God.
But you are a professor at heart. You are a teacher at heart. And I know that about you because I've listened to you, been in the room with you as you're teaching, and it just truly comes from your heart. And I'm wondering if there was a teacher when you were younger that had an influence on you. To want to teach, or how did that come about, that desire to share knowledge?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the funny part about like a lot of the stuff that I do. It's I've always considered my like anybody. Like, I've done this, I've been doing this for God, I want to say 15 years now. But longer than that, I had always told people that I was a teacher first, photographer second, right? Creator second, video person second, but teacher for like I get really excited about just wanting to share what I know and talking to people about other stuff. And a lot of that, I think, had to do. All right, so story time. One of the things you'll know about me is just like I'm always telling stories. One of the first things, so I grew up in the South Bronx, right? And poor, my mom never went to school, dad never went to school, went to high school in the Bronx, had a chip on my shoulder, but was smart. I went to an English class and I like all of a sudden, like, I was really fast. Like, I was gifted and I was pushed through classes, but I didn't want to do anything. I wanted to just go play handball and just go hang out with friends and stuff. And I went to this one class. So everybody has that teacher moment. I have a teacher moment. Her name was Edna Senderoff. And I was just sitting there and I was like, this is a bunch of bull stuff. I don't want to be here. I'm trying not to curse too. I was like, this is a bunch of bull. I don't want to be here. I want to be with my friends. I don't want to be in this smarty smart class. Like, I think this is just crap. I don't want to do it. And I was about to leave. And she turned to me and she was just like, listen, here's the deal. You can go and be with your friends tomorrow if you want. And go back to that other class. You don't have to be in this English class. Just go. However, if you come back tomorrow, you have to be committed to be able to do this. I'm going to ask you a question. She's like, do you know what an epiphany is? And I was like, I have no idea. Like, I don't know what you're talking about, lady. She's like, I'm going to mind you, this is like, what, seventh grade, I want to say, something like that. I was like, junior high. She's like, do you know what verisimilitude is? And I'm like, okay. And she was just like, here's the deal. I know that you're having a problem. I have a bunch of personal problems in my life and stuff. But she just kind of cut through it. She was just like, I know you have a personal. She's like, you have something in you wrong. And she's like, your problem is you don't know the words to be able to communicate what is inside you. What I'm going to do is I'm going to teach you the words on how to communicate that. That's what this is. All that crap that's inside you has words. I'll teach you how to use them and you'll get it out. You'll either get it out or it'll kill you, just like it's killing every single person around you right now in the South Bronx. And I was like, shit, crap, that's deep for like, 7-year-old, seventh grader. I went home and I was like, man, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. And sure enough, I came back and I was like, I'm gonna do it. And going through that process for me was about kind of learning expression. Like I would, like when I first got out of school, like I wanted to teach English. I wanted to teach the deaf, right? Like I was headlong into wanting to do sign language, and I was going to go to Gallaudet, and I became a high school English teacher. Like my degree is in high school, like secondary education English, concentration in Shakespeare. And all I wanted to be able to do was show people that path forward. And it's funny because it's like all of those things that happened and how to be able to talk and how to be able to communicate with stuff that I constantly use in photography, in writing, in music. Like I do, I try to do music. I'm not like the secret closet wish to be Hans Zimmer, but it's one of those things where it's like, I'm always using that, trying to be able to get what's inside you and kind of push it out. And photography is like, you know, like your shutters are your verbs and your f-stops are your adjectives. And it's always about that kind of level of communication. So I'm always using it to try to be able to see if I can help someone else get whatever it is that's inside them out. So,
wow. There's a lot of places that we can go.
I know.
I mean, what an epiphany. How did you work all those things out? Was it music? Was it creativity? Because creativity heals, I believe.
It's, you know, the funny part about it is that, like, a lot of the times, and like, I've done this, like, we've known each other for a long time. Like, I've done this on the, you know, teaching Photoshop and teaching Lightroom and doing all that kind of stuff. And I never really talked about, like, the personal side of a lot of what I did. I just kind of was just like, listen, I'm just an instrument to kind of help you learn what it is. Like, you don't need to know about me. You need to know about how to be able to do this. Like, I'm immaterial for most of it. But the funny part about being, quote unquote, internet famous, which isn't really famous, but like the funny part about it is that a lot of people listening, they listen to the podcasts, they listen to the shows, you know, like 500, 600 of one show. People find some sort of communication with it. They find some sort of connection, right? And they turn around, and I can't tell you how many times I would go places like around the world and people were like, oh my God, thank you for this. Thank you for doing this. As a person who's from the Bronx, you know, people would be like, thank you for being a Latino that represents inside of this industry. And everybody asks, oh, like how cool was it? Like, you know, how'd you do it? How'd you work? How'd you survive? How'd you? And I wish I had a great story to be able to tell, but I don't. What I had was unbridled fear. What I had was the person to the left of me is dead, to the right of me is in jail. I mean, I grew up in 758 Kelly Street, the South Bronx. Then after that, I moved over to Westchester on the 6th. Everybody would know, like, J-Lo kind of thing, a little closer towards the South Bronx. You know, you grew up with a lot of, like, I grew up 4 blocks away from Amadou Diallo, where Amadou Diallo was shot like 50 something times. And it's, you grew up in that environment and you were just like, dude, if I stay here, I'm going to be in either one of these two places. I know that I want to do more. I just don't know what I want to do. So I wound up very illegally going to another school in the Bronx, Kennedy High School. 10 stories, right? So you had to go to school taking these escalators on every even floor. And I'm sitting there and I'm taking an escalator. And in the middle of all of it, I heard over the loudspeaker, it was just like, oh, you know, a representative is here from the State University of New York at Plattsburgh. And I was like, Plattsburgh, man, that sounds like Pittsburgh. I was like, where the hell is this? And so I turn around and I go and at this point, like, I'm, you know, gifted. I've done all my classes. Like, I graduated super early from high school. And I run into my guidance counselor's office, and we used to smoke on the ledge of her office, like, with the window open. I won't mention who this person is. I'm there long, long retired, obviously. But we're sitting there smoking. And I'm like, person, where's Plattsburgh? And they take a drag. They go back to a map, and they go, this is New York City. This is Plattsburgh, New York. And they're like, Plattsburgh, look dead at me. It was just like, Plattsburgh is 360 something miles, straight as the crow flies. Took another drag, looked me dead in the eye and said, it is the furthest place you can go from here. And I was like, that's where I want to go. And I just had to leave. And it was just a portion of, I mean, yeah, could it have been smart? cool, but it was probably more desperation than it was anything else. So I spent all of my time kind of going, what kind of skills, what kind of things can I put into a tool belt? I'm leaving. I got to go. I don't know what's out there. Like, how much stuff can I learn? And I just had to do that. And I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know what I was going to do, but it had to have been better from where I was.
So was there another point in your life where you had to have another life's epiphany?
Everything for me has just been about epiphany and reinvention. It's all those things. Like for me, like after the college thing, I turned around and I was like, high school English thing to me was like, okay, so I'm here. I'm going to be doing this for 4 years to try to get tenure so that I could be here for 40 in the middle of New York. I was like, I kind of want to see more. I kind of want to do more. I was just like, maybe 360 miles isn't it. At that point, like tech was cool. And I was like, well, I know how to teach, right? Like I know how to teach, and teaching is teaching. It's take a concept, break it down, make it easily understood, track it, measure it, move to the next thing. So I was like, I can do that with this computer thing that everybody's getting into. And then I'm like, all right, we'll swing for the fences. At that point, biggest player in town was IBM. And I was like, all right, let's go to IBM. Let's see what we can do there. So I worked at IBM, did a lot of traveling for them. And then I got recruited out to go work for a German software company in the middle of East Germany, moved out to East Germany, and did a whole bunch of stuff there, traveled all around Europe and traveled all around South America. And I was like, okay, well, maybe this is the farthest I could go. You know, and it was just all a question about just kind of coming back and reinventing and just going, all right, well, what am I going to do? You know, I shot through all of that stuff. I did all this cool stuff at Global Services, and I worked at Microelectronics, and I did all this kind of network infrastructure stuff. I got recruited out to Germany. I moved to Germany. And I was like, okay, maybe this is the farthest that I can go. And then, you know, the bottom fell out of everything.
How did the bottom fall out?
Oh, my God. So this was like during the dot-com boom, and, you know, like we had all these thousands of stock options and we had money, and I was basically, I had a flat in East Germany, I had an apartment in Long Island, and I had a long-term rental that I would do in San Francisco. I would just bop between the three.
Wow.
So it was like tons of money, like smoking cigars at the Monterey Aquarium, renting excursions, like all the dot-com stuff that you would see, like all the lavish excess. And the stock went from like 300 and something Deutschmarks to like delisted with the dot-com boom. Like they would bring people in, like security guards would come in and just like fire droves and droves of people. And I had to come back from Germany. And in the middle of all of that stuff, I went from having everything to nothing. Like I slept at a friend's, my friend's mom's house. She had like a little twin bed, and I stayed there, and all I had was like a 10 by 10. And this 10 by 10 storage, like U-Haul store, non-climate controlled. You had to get like a metal ladder and you had to put it up and open it. And I remember going there and opening that storage unit. To me, the storage unit was work, because that's all I knew. You know, we define so much of ourselves by what we do that when that gets pulled away, I was like, what am I going to do now? And I remember going there 3 days a week, and I sat there as if it was an office. And I remember thinking to myself, as long as I have this constant pulse, it's like a heartbeat. As long as I have that heartbeat, I know that I haven't blown my head off in the middle of all of it, which is pretty messed up when you think about it.
And so how did you move through that? Are there things that you still use today that moved through this period of your life when you were working out of a U-Haul 10 by 10 storage room?
I mean, the best thing that I can give you is there's a guy, like I watched CNN one time, I was watching CNN one time, there was Don Lemon was talking about his story, like his transformational story. And he was talking about a guy named T.D. Jakes, who was like a big pastor that he talked to, and he did all of that stuff. And then there's a line in the middle of this entire interview that he does, that he says, but he says, you know, like my house has been broken into, I've had no phone, I have no this, I have no that. And he's like, when you've had nothing, and he's like, when you get to the top and you come over. He's like, the fuel that I use to be able to do stuff is knowing where I've been, where I've come from, not where I'm going to. And a lot of the times, that's just been me. That, like, a lot of the times I've just been like, listen, all right, so you're here. So there's nothing but your skill sets and your drive and your want. What do you have in your pocket that you can piece together to be able to make another name, to be able to make another reinvention, to be able to do something else? And for me, it was like, well, I've always been taking pictures and I've always been doing this and I've always been teaching and I've always been doing the Photoshop and I've always been doing the this. How do we reimagine all of that? How can we do something else with that? And it was from there, from that storage unit, that I said, all right, I'm going to commit. I'm going to turn around. I'm going to do this. And by any means necessary, I'm going to turn around and I'm going to try to produce the next thing that I can do. And then, you know, fast forward a couple years later, I have a hit show and I'm traveling the world and I'm one of the Photoshop guys. Like, there's all of this other stuff that happened after that. But it was literally like, okay, fear, you're here. You're in the room. I know you're here. I know that you're right behind me. Rather than run away from it, just stop and reassess. What do you have and how bad do you want to get out of it?
I'm wondering who in your life has helped carry you through. I know you're a husband and a father. And so what does family mean to you?
I think that, you know, being a father puts a certain level of fear inside of me because I want to make sure that I'm successful for her. But, you know, I like tight with my brothers, tight with my mom. They help. They are a backbone. They are a support. But I think that at the end of the day, the best bet that you can make is on yourself. The best bet that you can make is to be able to just sit down and go, stop running, stop working to run away from all of this kind of stuff, you know, like, stop. I stop chasing my Instagram. Like, I don't post a lot of pictures that I make on Instagram. I turn around and I'm like, why? What's the point? Like at the end of the day, I feel like we just run through this entire rat race trying to chase all of these things that aren't important. And I think that what happens is I just want to just stop. Be like, what do I have? What can I make that's new, that's meaningful, that's genuine? And trust that. Not be afraid of it, not being afraid to stop. And I think that if there's anything that, you know, if you're listening and you're struggling and you're alone and you don't know what you're doing and you don't know what the sense is and you don't know how to be able to make it, just breathe, stop, reassess. What do you have? What can you put together? And how can you repackage most of that stuff? And where can you get help?
Can you talk to me about being Latino in this industry? What have you seen as challenges and what have you seen as wins?
Well, for me, the funny part about being Latino is that it was never really a thing for the longest time, which I thought was kind of funny. It's like when I would go out there and I would talk to people, every now and again, people would be like, oh my God, thanks for representing. And I'm like, representing what? And I didn't really get it. But oddly enough, like, I got my start when I was going to these Photoshop conferences. One of the people that I turned for inspiration to was a guy named Burt Monroy, who was considered largely, I mean, he's a Photoshop god. Like, he's one of these people that does all that kind of stuff. I remember talking to him and he was like, Burt, Humberto Monroy. And he's like, he's Latino. And you're like, oh my God, that's so cool. Coming from the Bronx, being Mexican and Puerto Rican, you know, I'm very proud. Like, RC is, everybody knows me as RC, but like a lot of the times the reason RC came from was because I hated people calling me Raphael. Like when I was a kid, like a baby, I hated Raphael. I hated Ralph. I hated all that stuff. I was like, my name is Rafael. Like, it's different. And I was like, it doesn't sound good when you say it. And I think RC came kind of out of all of that. So I've always been very proud of who I was as a Spanish person, but it was never something that was prevalent to me. And as I started to see more and more, as I started to teach and I started to see this kind of stuff more and more, I started seeing that if we have a platform, my personal belief, like if you have a platform, you have a responsibility. If people are coming to see you, if people are coming to your Instagram, if people are coming to your Facebook, if they're coming for, if you are taking their attention, you have a responsibility to be honest. And you have a responsibility to be able to motivate and inspire. And apparently being a Latino was something that was important. And then as I started looking back and as I started doing most of that stuff, I started noticing, I was like, there's not a lot of Latino podcasts, a lot of photography. It's very Anglo. Like, you know, we were doing that kind of stuff. And it's just like, where's going? I was doing some stuff in Mexico and I was doing some stuff in Panama. And they're like, oh, we got to bring, you know, these people from the States and bring them down here. And I was like, what about all the people down here? I was like, there's a lot of stuff that's happening down here. Like in Panama, I was talking to Tito Herrera. Tito is fantastic. Like, if there's one person that I think people need to watch, you have to watch Tito. That guy is phenomenal. And it's like, he does all the stuff. He does all the Nat Geo. He travels around the world. He's got pictures of Bear Grylls and like all of this kind of stuff. He did this thing with La 18, the street gang. He has this picture of a Panamanian, or not Panamanian. He's in Honduras. But this picture of these people that are sitting inside of a jail cell on hammocks, that's just phenomenal. But anyway, so that's Tito. So I started noticing more and more that that people resonated with the fact that I was Spanish, that I did this kind of stuff. And I was like, then you know what? Why don't I start talking about that? Why don't I start doing more work in Spanish? And now I'm actually going out and doing some things in, you know, Latino communities. I went back and I started doing some stuff down in the Bronx. You know, it's funny, like everything kind of came full circle. Like now I'm going back and I'm doing all these things at, you know, I went out and I did some stuff at the Bronx Documentary Center. And like, that's the one part where it's like, I got, like, I almost started to cry because they posted something like the Bronx Documentary Center is being run by a guy named Michael Camber, who's fantastic. And they're doing all this work with Bronx photographers, with people that are doing some stuff in the Bronx. And I'm talking to these people and I'm there with Heisler and I'm there with Mike Davis and they're talking. The kids are just kind of like eyes glazed over. They're like, okay, you shot 70 time covers, big deal. And then I talk to them and I'm like, dude, I grew up on Kelly Street, like four blocks from here. And everybody was like, whoa, wait, what? And I was like, yeah, that was the coolest thing. And then all of a sudden, not too long after that, I wound up getting a message that came out and it said, Bronx's very own Photoshop and, you know, Photoshop guru or something like that. And I was just like, I came home. It's been a long trip and I came home. That I thought was really cool.
So what's next for you as we're recording right now, your semester at Syracuse has ended. What's next for RC?
Well, right now I'm doing a lot of, some teaching here, right? So I got stuff that I'm doing here on storytelling and, drone work that I'm doing here. And I still go out and I'm shooting. I do a bunch of stuff for, like, not just photography. A lot of people know it, like, surprise, you know, you're just not doing it just in photography. I do a lot of video production work. Probably the last couple of years I've been doing a lot of work with around the FDA, so like the government organization. So I can never show anything, but it pays the bills. And so I've got a lot of work. I got a lot of that work. I'm actually headed to this afternoon. I got to go sign for a studio. Like, I'm getting a studio here in the area, bringing the studio back up here for a lot of those kinds of productions and video productions and stuff that I'm doing for like Wacom and some stuff that I'm doing for X-Rite. And I got to try to see if I can figure in some stuff for Canon. So I keep a lot of, you know, rather than have it be like, well, here's RC at this really cool, interesting, don't you want to be this person? I'm like, no, I'm just teaching. I just go to these people and I'm like, listen, can I help teach the thing that you do clearer? So I spend a lot of time working on that kind of stuff. And then I have to work on a couple more books. And
I know we didn't even talk about RC the author. How many books have you written?
8 so far. I wrote 2 this past year. Those were my favorite. It was like super nerd moment. Like for me as a teacher who's done all this kind of stuff, right when I started at Syracuse, Pearson called and asked if I would do their Adobe Classroom in a book, which is like the official training curriculum for Adobe. And I was like, yeah, totally. So like I did their Photoshop and Lightroom CC classroom in a book. And then like a couple weeks after, they're like, hey, listen, would you want to do the Lightroom one? So it just went to press. I think it was like yesterday. So it was two books in a semester. I wanted to jump out a window, but I was like, okay, this is cool. It's like, and I got to work on the next set of books and just keep humming along on projects. But I think that's awesome.
Well, at the time of this recording, we are super excited to see you here for Photoshop Week, which is our biggest event here of the year. And this year it is June 12th to the 14th. And so you're going to be able to see RC and so many more. Be sure to go RSVP for Photoshop Week right here on creativelive.com. Thank you so much, RC.
Thank you. Thank you. This was awesome.
I'm Kenna Klosterman, and you've been listening to the We Are Photographers podcast from Creative Live. Be sure to follow RC Concepcion at aboutrc.com and aboutrc on all social platforms. At Creative Live, we believe there's a creator and a photographer in all of us. And yes, that means you. If you're looking to get fresh perspectives, inspiration, or skills to boost your hobbies, business, or life, we've got a class or two, or thousands, for you to check out. Just head over to creativelive.com. For those of you brand new to Creative Live, welcome to our global community of over 10 million strong. We have a special gift just for you. Use the code WEAREPHOTOGRAPHERS at checkout and get $10 off your very first purchase. The code is We Are Photographers, all one word, no spaces. In fact, you can use that $10 off to pick up one of RC's many classes on Creative Live. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review us wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you again to Professor RC Concepcion, and we'll see you all June 12th through 14th, 2019, on creativelive.com for Photoshop Week.